Yes. Well, don't think about that. Think we can't edit.
But we can do bloopers.
Well, that's true. Okay, we can do that.
All right, let's go.
But think about it. Can't be edited.
Can't be edited. All right, let's go.
All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I am very excited to bring Kadeen Loban onto our, you know, the Cayman life, the slice of Cayman life that we're trying to do here with this podcast. And it's very exciting because Kadeen is a major, I think I would go as far as saying a stakeholder in the industry that we deal with. And Kadeen, why don't you tell us a little bit about you, the whole RBC branch manager, your wealth. Is it wealth management? You used to be a wealth manager at Butterfield and RBC, but now you're a branch manager.
Yeah.
You know your stuff.
Thanks, Mike. And it's always good to partner with Property Cayman. You know, we do a lot together. I have been in the industry for almost 20 years in Cayman. Yep. So always been private banking wealth management from Coutts to RBC, RBC Wealth. Did a little stint at Butterfield and came right back home.
Yeah, good for you. Awesome. So generally speaking, what I've enjoyed about our business relationship over the years, first of all, we're neighbors as well. So we're friends. We pass each other on the road when I'm walking the dog and the baby and all that sort of stuff.
All the good stuff.
But is you're very responsive. You answer the questions and that bodes well when we're putting our clients in front of you when it comes to mortgages, regardless of where they are on their property journey. You and your team, in fact, are great. And I'll even go as far as saying that you're extremely competitive now as you're building your portfolio at RBC's, I suppose, your mortgage portfolio. Your rates are actually really, really competitive, which is great.
Our purpose, RBC's purpose, you know, helping clients thrive and communities prosper. So clients are at the center of everything we do. Always get it right, first time right. We do try to respond to our clients within 3 hours. At least by end of day.
Brilliant.
Very responsive team we have there. And proud to say that RBC is very competitive. We've got awesome rates on mortgages, on lending products, best online banking platform.
I've always felt that regardless of the industry that we may work in, it shouldn't necessarily be our focus. We should be more thinking that we're in the relationship business.
Relationship building.
And from my perspective, property sales and rentals and landlords and tenants and all of that sort of stuff is almost a byproduct of what we do. But if we focus our attention, just like you are, you're a very customer-centric outfit. Yeah. And I think that is the game changer. That's the difference that it makes, focusing in on the relationships.
No, agreed, Mike. That's why we do so well together,
right?
It is the relationships that we build. It's the advice that we give to the clients. It's not about selling a product. It's about that client and what's best for them. It's about referring them in if they need legal advice, accounting, you know, whatever it is, we're able to assist as best as we can. So yeah, all about client relationships.
So you've been in the new position for only a short few months so far.
Yeah.
How long has it been?
3 months.
Is it just 3 months?
It is months. It feels like forever.
Wow, and you've already put together a couple of meetings, and we had lunch with the regional directors.
Yes, so the head of the Caribbean Banking was down.
That was a really interesting. And see, that's a prime example. We went to lunch at the Brasserie, and you selected two or three other conveyance attorneys. I was the only realtor on that particular event. I say event, but just the lunch. And then four or five of your key the managing director, the head of commercial, Shane, is he head of commercial? Is that?
Corporate banking.
Corporate banking, and of course, Chris.
Head of business banking, Roland, and Erica, our country head.
That's right.
Yeah.
But the conversation at that table was exactly what we're talking about. It was really, let's collaborate, let's discuss the trends, where things have come, where the frustrations and challenges are, how do we overcome these obstacles? And it's that connection that is the game changer, as far as I'm concerned, when it comes to passing on that knowledge and guidance to our respective clients.
Yeah. No, agreed.
No, I enjoyed that very much. So thank you again. So we both have medium-sized teams. What do you love and hate about management? People.
It's all about the people. So there's lots of things I love. I hate's a bit of a strong word. So we look at things more of opportunities, you know, where can we see the opportunities to improve.
Right.
So same thing that I love is the same thing that I can find many opportunities, you know, and it is the people, right?
Yeah.
So I enjoy working with people, trying to develop the skills, etc. in the same breath, it does break my heart when I see some people not performing at their full potential, right? And that's reality. Not everybody will do it. And it's trying to encourage them because I know that they have it. I know it's in there, you know, so encourage them building that self-esteem and then in turn increasing productivity. You know, at RBC every year we do our strategic priorities, and two of the strategic priorities this year is engaged and empowered team and developing talent for today and tomorrow. So those are two things that as a bank regionally we're focusing on. So we've put a lot into development plans. Where do you want to go? How do we cross train?
You see, you know what's really interesting about that is that when I left RE/MAX and started Property K-Man with Stefan, we wanted to shift our thinking. Mm-hmm. And there was Richard Branson's quote, which sounds extremely cliche, but it's almost forget the client entirely.
Yeah.
Forget the client. Train your team so they could compete against you successfully and competitively. And empower them and give them, help them reach their potential and everything, but treat them so they would never dream of leaving.
Yeah.
Because most people will shift their jobs and their careers because of personality clashes or not feeling appreciated or recognized. It's not always about money. It's usually that feeling of fulfillment and recognition. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So I really admire that mindset and that approach, that your two strategic approaches is basically team empowerment and helping them find their potential.
Yeah. And it feels really good to be a part of that journey.
Yeah. Because the client's experience ultimately benefits from that. So it's not forget about the screw of the client. It's nothing like that. It's just focusing your attention here because a byproduct of that is the client's positive experience because of a happy team.
So
right?
I give you an example. I'm a happy employee. I don't normally walk around branded. I'm happy to walk around branded, right? So I am engaged. I'm empowered. I see a career path. And from there, I'm happy to sell, right?
Yeah, I am promote and represent. And well, good for you. Excellent. What's the biggest thing you and your team are working on right now, whether it's the internal systems, and perhaps we've just touched on that, the strategic approaches this year, but the public offerings, what's commanding your brain at the moment? What's taking up your time in from the offering that you're presenting to the public? Tough question. Come on, Kadeen.
You know, so I wanted to kind of go back to our lunch a bit, Mike, and then I'll come back.
Sure,
you know,
go for it.
So just going back to the lunch, you know, at that lunch, we kind of touched on processes, right? Mm. And our head mentioned that we know that there are ways and places that we are working on improving from a systems perspective, et cetera. And those things will come, right? In the meantime, we've got the employees who are supporting every process, the client in every process, right? So coming back from a products perspective, we just came off of the mortgage campaign, you know, mortgage ideas shipped around you. We got inundated, like
really
so many applications from that campaign. It's a good problem to have. We're happy that we got a lot, but it means that it's a little bit slower than we would have normally been or take to get things done. So that now we're wrapping up. So campaign's ended, but we're now processing applications. We've launched our auto campaign.
Auto campaign.
Yep, so we've got an auto campaign going on. Rates of 5.25% for a car loan.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So, and that's...
Which is really good.
Yeah.
Aren't they usually 17% or something ridiculous?
Yeah.
So how can the bank... You have to answer this question. I can imagine that your rates are far more competitive because your margins, your profit margins are less.
Yes.
The bank's still making money, but not as much as perhaps other banks would be. Which is fine. I suppose you're in this sort of a space where you're trying to increase the size of your portfolio.
Right.
And establish relationships. Yep. And then from my perspective, what we do is we're all about nurturing those relationships forevermore because the lifeline of that relationship will just continue to feed the business.
Yep. Yep.
So that's how you're doing it.
Next year, we'll be celebrating 60 years, huh?
60
years?
So
we're not going anywhere. And now we're really in a growth phase. Like Cayman is growth.
How are you enjoying your new location?
You know, I'd like it.
Yes, yeah, I imagine you would.
I do.
It's very nice there.
Yeah.
Caymana Bay.
No.
Oh.
No.
But
so I was
RBC
Caymana
has
Bay.
Opened up at Caymana Bay?
Yeah, so RBC are... So the private banking currently shares a space with Dominion Securities.
Right.
which is our sister company that focuses on investments and wealth management for clients. But in terms of the branch banking, when I took on the new role 3 months ago, I moved to Georgetown.
That's right.
Because the main branch is Georgetown, and then we've got an advice center in Red Bee.
That's right.
Yeah.
So RBC's grown plenty over the last few years then, hasn't it? Yeah. Locally, I'm saying.
Yeah, we are.
I suppose internationally as well.
We have, and it's a growth market, and we're focused on growth. Key market for RBC.
Do you know what? Actually, and to bring this back to real estate, because that's all I understand, I suppose, is having that long-term mindset, making decisions, I call it secure tomorrow today, making decisions today that are going to service the long term.
Right.
So you can look back at your younger self, whether it's on an individual personal level or a team or the company or the brand or the international conglomerate, right? Mm-hmm. If we think longer chunks like this, I think it'll make a big impact on, we should all have medium and long-term goals anyway.
Yep.
There you go.
Well, right, and then in addition to that, we're focusing on the community initiatives, raising brand awareness. So we just did the RBC Race for Kids. All the proceeds from that, which was $21,000 that we raised, we had almost 500 Fantastic. Participants. So all the funds went to the Alex Panton Foundation.
Very worthy, right.
Yep. So globally, RBC is very focused on mental health. And even within the branch and the bank and our staff, employees, there's a lot of support for mental health. So we chose Alex Panton Foundation as a charity of choice, and it's for kids, teens, etc. So that's going to be an annual thing going forward. It will be first Sunday in May, in line with Mental Health Month.
Well done.
Right. So looking for 1,000 participants next year.
Okay.
At a minimum. So, Mike, you can start spreading the word.
Right. Well, this you heard it here.
Yep. We also participated in the Earth Day Chamber cleanup.
Yeah.
On the weekend gone, on Saturday morning, there was about 20 of us RBC volunteers at a mastic trail with the National Trust planting some native trees.
Well done.
So, yep, I had a shovel.
Did you?
No. I did. I have a shovel. Check out my LinkedIn page. We've got a lot of pictures.
Okay. Yep. So is that the first and last time you'll hold a shovel? Is that
Very first time. I'll do it again next year. Right. So lots of community things. We do scholarships for the UCCI children, or students rather. We do the Spelling Bee competition, Leadership Cayman program. And we've recently agreed to a sponsorship with Cayman Arts Festival on their after-school brass program. So more details to come on Yeah, so we'll support that.
You know, one of our company policies, Property Cayman, is that any team member, first of all, we hire slow, fire fast is the concept. So to get through the door, our recruitment strategy is pretty strict.
Yeah.
And one of the requirements is that you are a active member in the community. We feel very strongly that, first of all, we all have a moral obligation to participate in our community. And it could be in anything. It doesn't matter to what extent, but if we all just do a little bit. But when there's a bank, a brand like RBC that has an actual company policy of community involvement, it goes such a long way. Mm-hmm. We require each individual at our company to do something. Like Jen's off in Berlin at the moment, Special Olympics. She's absolutely incredible. And we've got Big Brother, Big Sister, Crisis Center, 100 Men, The Give a Damn.
Yep.
There's Humane Society. We're all doing a little bit of something. But the company itself, we figured we wanted to keep it focused in on our industry. What we've done is we've set up Property Cayman Cares, which is focused purely on the affordable housing issue.
Yeah.
Designed to help young Caymanians get onto the property ladder. And it's a long-term fix, as opposed to most charities are kind of behind the curve scrambling for Band-Aid fixes.
Yeah.
They're looking for sudden changes to a particular scenario or situation. And what we're trying to do is just sort of gather up momentum and collaborate with banks, with government, with conveyance attorneys, with suppliers, contractors, whatever, so that we can actually have a long-term fix to an ongoing issue.
You should rope us in, like, from an educational perspective as well, right? It's so important to educate the youth on financial literacy and, you know, budgeting.
Wow, this is a big one.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. right? The things that they should do to prep for, to get onto that property ladder. As you said, it's a long-term plan that you're doing. So we do that. We will go in and speak to the UCCI students about financial literacy. So
as
you're launching.
Thank you. Absolutely. You know. We've raised about 150,000 so far, and our goal is to raise $1 million. Now, we may not necessarily know exactly how we're going to allocate those funds at this stage, but when we've got a nice war chest behind us, then we're going to be able to, you know, we'll go to the banks and say, hey, will you do an interest-free loan for 5 years? There you go. We got it. We got a nod, everybody.
Shane.
The point is that I think if we all participate and do a little bit of something, and when we can collaborate in a small, relatively small environment that Cayman is, and we all kind of know each other, but working together, we can all have a better and stronger impact. So I'm excited about that. Actually, let's talk a little bit about your financial literacy. Do you remember it must have been in COVID when government allowed everybody to take out up to 25% of their pension. Okay, I've got to be in my bonnet about this. And I think you may know where I'm going with it. So everybody took out the maximum they could take out. And this is where my problem is that a pension is a long-term investment, as we know. But what a lot of people, and this is where the socioeconomic divide starts to happen more and more, it becomes very evident. What a lot of people did was that they went and bought new clothes and a new car and a spoiler for their car or a wave runner or a set of kayaks for the family or what have yous. That money's gone.
Yeah.
Gone.
Yeah.
And what others did was they took out that money and they paid off their mortgage or they put it in another long-term investment. Or some people left it there. And then you were given the option whether or not you wanted to continue the month-to-month participation in the pension program. They just put a pause on it, didn't they? Yeah. And a lot of people said, yeah, I'm not going to pay my pension for a couple of years. But the impact that has in the future is crazy problematic.
Yeah. It's funny. If you speak to somebody who is retired and they will tell you they wish they started with their pension much younger, right? Yeah.
And didn't take out of it if they had the option.
Yeah, absolutely. So it is a part of that retirement planning for the future. And I think they're just passed where they're going to allow you to be able to take out more for the home ownership, right?
Just purely to pay off your mortgage. Yeah. You're allowed to take up to 100,000, I think they may have said. I don't necessarily think maybe it should be a percentage, but only purely for your mortgage. And this is because we're in a bit of a pricing crisis, right? Everything just costs so much. Insurance, home insurance has pretty much doubled. Cost of living, inflation, interest rates. So we're going to talk about that in a moment. I think the problem is that the financial literacy, like if somebody comes to you and says, hey, I want to buy a brand new BMW, Aston Martin, whatever it may be, you have to obviously consider them. They put in their application and everything. But if they're renting or they're still living at home and this will clearly be maximizing their monthly cost, do you actually say, sorry, you don't qualify? I mean, where's your financial responsibility?
So you actually look at the overall picture, right? And you educate the individual. I mean, it could be that if this individual has a lot of savings, but not own a property, then that's a different story, right?
Sure. So
Everyone's different. So you do have that discussion. I mean, I have seen, or even if we do submit to the risk team, I've seen where the risk adjudicators might ask, well, how are you going to own a home in the future? But these are questions that a relationship manager normally asks, right?
Right.
Before going ahead and saying, yes, let's do this. So there are different things that we look at, but we can go over that in the future in a bit, I should say.
Yeah, you've made some incredible notes. You've shared some information here. We can look into that now. Is it the 5 C's? Is that what we're going to talk about?
Yeah, that's what I was going to talk about. So when it comes to financing, right, either home, small loans, anything that you're doing, what we tend to look at is the 5 C's, right?
The 5 C's of credit.
The 5 C's of credit. It's a good way to look at it.
Right.
And it's good for people to understand that this is what the banks look at. And I always say, if you're lending your own money, you'd probably be doing the same thing, right? So character, will the client pay? You know, who are you? Are you somebody who will make the payments? Capital, what happens if you can't pay? Do you have liquid assets somewhere that you have easy access to mm-hmm. that you can then use towards a payment? Capacity, can the client pay? You know, so that's where your debt ratio comes into consideration when we're very cautious and conservative. You know, can you pay? What's your income? What other obligations do you have? Are you able to make this monthly payment? Your credit history, have you paid in the past, right? So there are people who, for whatever reason, might have missed a few credit card payments or were late on those credit card payments. Those things affect your credit history, right? And then collateral, what are we holding as security? So what happens if you don't pay? So those are the five C's that we look at when we're lending.
In 2008, 9, 10, I became, and I should add, self-proclaimed king of foreclosures. Oh man, was I busy with foreclosures. I'm sure there were others that would proclaim to be the kings and queens of foreclosures as well.
Yeah.
But that was a very interesting time because it kind of jumped up and caught all the banks by surprise, the number of people that suddenly couldn't afford to. So the laws at the time were, well, you basically can't pay for 3 months, straight into foreclosure. Mm. The law has changed. So the banks have been less likely to loan, like almost your applications are a little bit more considered and stricter.
Yep.
So that your clients don't ultimately find themselves in these situations.
Right.
But you're not necessarily loaning 99% anymore, right?
No. So RBC will consider financing up to 95% for residents on the island. And again, all these five C's would come into play when we decide, are we going to finance 95% or do we do 80%?
Yeah, right? So if you've got a ton of collateral and the loan to value is in very comfortable, lend them up to
95%. Absolutely, yeah.
So you determine that those are just for local residents. I imagine long-term, well-established residents would qualify.
Yeah, so for non-residents, and by non-residents, we mean people who do not live on islands. So they're foreigners just buying investment property. Then we look at up to 65%.
And you, because one of the reasons is you can't use their collateral in a different jurisdiction to give you a safety net here in Cayman.
Right.
It's logical. It's understandable.
Yeah.
And I suppose part of that is that they put X amount, a substantial amount of cash, either in RBC Dominion Securities or with the bank as part of that, I suppose, a cash collateral.
Yeah. So there are various things I would look at, you know,
when it
comes to the non-residents.
What's interesting is that no two clients are the same.
Exactly.
Same with
us. Exactly.
Everybody is at a different stage. They have different visions, different outlooks, different priorities, mm-hmm. and everybody has to be considered in their own right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
Okay. What about pre-qualification? So a client comes to see me and says, I want to buy this house, and there are other people interested in the house, and the seller is only willing to accept their offer if they can demonstrate that they're pre-qualified. What is that? I mean, listen, I know what it is.
Yeah.
But the issue seems to be the buyer will say, yeah, I've been to the bank. They said it's okay. The seller actually needs something of substance. So they ask the bank to provide them a letter saying, based on X, Y, and Z, the five C's, call it what you will. Yes, Mr. and Mrs. Jones qualifies for the purchase of this $2 million property, for example.
So the pre-qualification is different from a conditional approval, right? So a pre-qualification is the client will come and sit with us, sit with the lender, and go over everything that they have, right? Their income, their debt, etc. I tell people always, always, always be 100% honest because we run credit reports globally, right? Like, if you're
supposed to be honest,
absolutely be honest, be upfront, you know, declare everything that you have going on. And then the lender can actually figure out how can they, if there's something that's going to throw the TDS, your debt ratio off, they can figure out, okay, how can I mitigate that? You know, is there something else that I can ask you for to help to make this deal work, right? Mm-hmm. The financing work. So from the pre-qualification perspective, the letter will say, based on the information that we have and subject to full review and approval, this is what you'll qualify for.
So why wouldn't somebody just try and get a line of credit? So they're fully qualified up to, in this case, $2 million,
for example. In order to get fully qualified a line of credit, they'd have to have something as security.
Right? And more often than not, people's home that they're trying to buy will become the security.
Right. And then you don't normally do a line of credit against a new purchase. That's normally an amortizing mortgage.
And all based on existing collateral.
Yeah. Yeah. So in order to get full approval, you have to know what are we approving.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you can't get an approval for a property that we don't know if it's going to meet our standards from a valuation perspective, et cetera, right? So that's why it's a pre-qual as opposed to an approval.
Pre-qual.
Pre-qual.
I like that, the way you said it. Pre-qual. Well, listen, you've assisted numerous clients for me and the team, and we're obviously very grateful. I want to talk a little bit about the market. Mm-hmm. I'm a firm believer that we are in a little bit of a confidence crisis at the moment. We're anticipating that things will calm down a little bit. I've said it before, there have been five different occasions in my career where there's been an impact to the local real estate market. The first one was 2011, the Twin Towers. That impacted our visitors to Cayman and confidence of foreigners traveling to Cayman.
You mean 2001?
What did I say?
2011.
Did I say that? Yeah, sorry, September 11, 2001.
Yeah.
And then the second one was Hurricane Ivan.
Yep.
That impacted our tourism product and visitors to Cayman, and it took a while. So we missed probably two seasons at that stage. But the main impact was that people had said, well, if you can't go to the Cayman Islands, they went to different islands.
Yep.
And then they enjoyed themselves so much, they went back to that island year on year. So you have to sort of wait for them to come back or replace our repeat visitors. The third one was 2008, 9, 10, 11 crisis. Foreclosure King, remember? And then there was the COVID crisis. That was the fourth. I'm calling this one at the moment the fifth major event in my career thus far. And that's a confidence crisis, where it's kind of like a, you know, obviously inflation, interest rates, which we're going to talk about momentarily. Insurance has doubled. Yeah. It's a lot of people are, we're not necessarily going to see the same foreclosure situation as before, because I think the banks are a little bit more, they're less exposed.
Conservative, yep.
And they're also a little bit more lenient, can I say lenient, with the potential defaulting clients?
Okay.
Is that fair to say? I mean, listen, I don't want to say lenient, like, yeah, sure, don't worry about it. When you get around to paying, you can. It's not that lenient, but it's certainly a case of that they weren't necessarily as exposed, so they shouldn't be that close to the edge of the cliff anyway, is my understanding of how the banking laws were designed to protect the clients in these events. Mm-hmm. So this being the fifth crisis, the fifth happening, I'm calling it the confidence crisis. I anticipate when the Fed stops putting up the interest rates, which I'm hoping will happen shortly, that'll be an indication that we've reached the peak of interest rate hikes. This is my hopes and dreams. We have extremely low supply and inventory in the real estate market at the moment, which means that if confidence starts coming back to the market, which a no change in the current interest rates will do, then there's going to be people coming off that fence and actually making the decision to move forward and purchase the property. That is going to be a sudden increase in demand to an already low supply to the market, which is going to be upward pressure on pricing because we've got such low inventory. What are your thoughts on interest rates and this projection and this trend? We're seeing Q4 2023 being an active time.
Right.
What's going to happen, Kadeen?
Kadeen is not an economist nor an investment.
Neither am I.
So we always have to put that out there, right?
Right.
Disclaimer.
Details.
So I think I would agree with you, Mike, where, you know, after all this rate hikes, we're kind of thinking and expectations that we're nearing the peak.
Yep.
So we're nearing the peak. We're now at 8.25% as prime. But there's still no little to end in sight in terms of supply and inflation, right? So I'm not going to speak to that. There's We don't know where that's going to end.
I think my problem is I've got too short a sight. I think it's going to take longer than I would hope and expect.
Right.
I wonder if that's going to come into play with my projections.
Yeah.
In full transparency, I mean, this is what we see happening.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the 2008-09 crisis, it dragged on for 3-4 years.
Yeah.
So I think the full impact of this is going to continue from some time to come.
Yeah.
For some time to come. Absolutely. Fair enough. But does that mean that the banks are going to be shy and super strict in their lending for the next 2 or 3 years?
So we won't be changing our policies, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I think, like you said, we're already very conservative in terms of how we lend from right. a debt ratio.
For all the right reasons.
Absolutely. So that won't change. The policies are there and they're there to protect the clients, as you said. From an RBC perspective, we've been educating clients, existing clients, and as we're onboarding clients, right? What can they do with these rising rates? We've seen 145% increase in the amount of clients who've opted to go fixed rates.
Really?
From last year. Mm-hmm. So you'll sit with your clients. I mean, we work with our clients through growth periods and we're working through with them through periods of challenging times,
yeah.
right? So like you said, we have a very low delinquency rate, right? We are educating clients. We're actively calling the clients. We're telling them what their options are. If a client comes in and speaks to us, we give them the options. You can, if you're qualified to extend a term, we'll do that. That will reduce the payments. We'll look at the fixed rates. I mean, prime's at 8.25. We're doing fixed rates at like 7. So that gives them a better payment amount and stability. So we're working with clients, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think that's fantastic. Yeah. You have to. And I think I would encourage absolutely everybody to chime in with your bank if you haven't already, just at least if anything to understand what your options are.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also a big fan of changing the mortgage payments to weekly
yep.
as opposed to monthly.
Yeah.
Because that kind of chips away at the capital a little bit
yeah.
more, so you're less exposed to
yeah.
interest.
Yeah.
And
we do that.
And extending.
You can have a weekly or monthly bi-weekly.
Yeah. yeah.
So we have clients who do that.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. Again, yeah. chipping away a little bit more frequently. mm-hmm. What would be your advice for buyers and sellers in the current market?
All right.
Now, the market's always changing, right? And I appreciate that everybody's different, and it depends where you are on your property journey, as we yep. like to call it, and where you are at your stage in life. Mm-hmm. You know, a retiree is very different to that first-time Caymanian buyer yeah. buying their first
Absolutely.
Home. But
either way, buying a home is still a huge investment, right? So it's a big investment, and getting a mortgage, be it a first-time buyer, be it an investment mortgage, retirement home, it's still a process.
Right.
And it can seem like a daunting process. So, you know, for everybody, first-time homeowners, second-time, you know, it's all about getting financially prepared. Right. So step one, get financially prepared.
But sorry, what does that entail? Is that saving up?
Yeah. Saving up and speaking to your banker. Right. So
have the conversation.
Absolutely. It's coming back to, I guess, the financial literacy. And as you're further along in the journey, you have your wealth planners and your investment bankers.
I was going to say, absolutely.
You know,
you've got to map out your next 100 years,
yeah.
if not longer.
Mm-hmm.
And that may sound crazy, but if you've got a plan, then you're going to move in that direction. But if you don't have a plan, you're just going to be sort of bumbling around in the yeah. whirlwind of life and be distracted. And we'll wake up come retirement. I'm like, I can't afford to live.
Yeah.
I used up all my pension
Everything.
Back in 2023 and I got nothing to keep me going. And now I need to sell my home and you know, I don't
yep.
know,
yep.
require the state to help me eat.
Yeah.
And this happens.
And you know, it's things when we say financially prepared, Mike, you just touched on it, like home insurance has doubled. So it's not just thinking, okay, well, I want to buy something. Let me talk to my lender just about how much I'm going to pay monthly. It's what's going to happen in a few years when the home needs repairs. Are you saving for that? You know, I think rule of thumb is to put away 1% of the home value towards repairs in the future, right? Yeah. It's the home insurance, it's the utility bills. So those are the other things that you should consider when you're getting financially prepared.
This is music to my ears. So the number of homeowners associations in Cayman that do a cash reserve line item in their monthly homeowners fees, the strata payments, is painfully low. And what we've noticed is that predominantly along the 7 Mile Beach and the higher end stratas and homeowner associations have that cash line item, right? The lower you go into the different sectors of homeowner associations, the less that appears at all, which is very short-sighted. Yeah. And it doesn't matter even if it's $25, could be $10 per unit per month that goes into this, a little bit of something over a long period of time on a consistent basis. When you need to replace the roof or your air conditioning or insurance goes up, then all of a sudden you've got that cash there for you instead of having to dig into your pockets for something that you may not actually have.
Exactly.
So I almost require the strata laws should require there to be a cash line item in the monthly HOA fees, because being prepared, well, you get to sleep well at night.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just, it alarms me that stratas, and I understand why, because the homeowners will vote on, well, no, I don't want to increase my monthly exposure, particularly now.
Yeah.
But every little bit counts.
It does.
Seriously, can the bank not require, well, okay, sorry, we went on a tangent there. What you're requiring is the bank to understand the likelihoods that it's not just your mortgage payment, it's what the strata fees are going to be, what the cost of electricity is doing, you know, inflation. Yeah.
And we don't include like the utility bills. We'll include a strata, you know, in terms of calculating your debt ratio. Yeah. But we leave, I mean, there's a good amount of disposable income left to cover those other items. But yeah, no, very important to have that there. At 1% for future repairs, strata, and if you're just a homeowner, right, with no strata.
It's tough, right? I get it. I've been having this conversation with my sister. It's like, I can never get ahead. You and Nick are so successful. I'm like, wait a second, Vix. Don't worry. First of all, don't worry. Don't panic. There are opportunities everywhere. And all she has to do is shift her mindset to thinking a little bit longer term.
Long term.
So instead of buying something fancy, I call it the latte effect. Maybe you shouldn't even be drinking coffee or as much coffee, but when you spend that $7, $10 for a coffee every single day, imagine if you didn't drink coffee, you can you'll save a lot of money.
So it's funny, Mike, because that's my second point, you know, anticipating some lifestyle changes. There are certain lifestyle changes that you'll have to make in order to ensure that you have the savings there, you know, have you factored in these things? Like, as you said, okay, no coffee, no Starbucks, you know. You might have to buy some Nescafe at home.
Or stop drinking coffee entirely.
Hot water.
No, absolutely. I think the short-term disruption to your current lifestyle or the lifestyle that you've become accustomed to should be redesigned, taking into account your future needs that you may not even remotely know what those needs may be, but it's inevitable.
You know, you talk about AC, and my AC went recently and it costed a bit of money to fix. And I'm happy that I have that money put aside, that I didn't have to stress about, you know.
And you're talking $10,000 to replace the AC condensers and stuff. Plenty of money. Alternatively, you just get to learn to live with hot air. I mean, I don't think that's a possibility, particularly in the summer. It's hot out there right now.
Yeah.
Wow,
yeah.
It's hot.
Not in Cayman. I don't think anybody in Cayman could do that. Huh?
No.
Yeah.
No. No. But you know, there are people that can't afford that.
Absolutely.
There was the electricity costs have gone up, of course. The cost of fuel's gone up. So CUC sent out an email the other day. I'm sure you got it. They would have sent it to everybody. Ways in which you can keep your costs down. Mm. Keep the fridge. I tell my wife all the time, shut the fridge.
Shut the fridge door, please.
But also, like, the back patio door will be open, the air conditioning's on, and then she's going through the front door and she forgets something and she comes back into the house. And I go and, like, babes, you didn't shut the front door. And I'm standing there, I can feel the cold breeze, the last 2 hours of AC out the door. And then the machine has to work hard to get back to that nice, cool temperature. So shut the door, right? Close the curtains in the day when you're not there so the heat isn't coming in. Try and insulate your home a little bit better.
Yeah.
Close the fridge. Turn your AC 1 degree a little bit higher was another suggestion they made. Anyway, turn the AC off when you're not in the house.
Yeah.
Things like that. But I think if we can all shift our mindset and just the lifestyle, that's where we're coming from on this point, is you may not know what you're saving up for. Don't just react to the current cost of living crisis. Mm-hmm. We should have been thinking about this years ago, but now here's your opportunity to save money in the interim where you can. But when this cost crisis passes, still continue to save where you can because it'll protect your future. Secure tomorrow today.
Yep. I like that.
I mean, I'm in a constant state of preparation. My team calls it a constant state of panic. I'm like, well, you could call it a constant state of panic because something's going to happen. I don't know what, but something's going to happen. And everyone else are like, Mike, relax. It's okay. I'm like, no, it's not all right. We got to be prepared for the unknowns.
I'm picturing those shows with underground tunnels and a war room.
Oh, I'm not that bad. But that is pretty hardcore.
Yeah.
But listen, we're in hurricane season, right?
Yeah.
You got to make sure you've got your water.
Mm-hmm.
Because if there's a hurricane coming and you go out to get water, what happens when there's no water left?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Always be prepared. I sold you your property. How long ago was that?
2012. I moved in 2012. So you sold me that in 2011, right?
Was it really in 2011?
Yeah, it was pre-construction.
That's right.
Yeah. So I was there every day.
Yes, you were. I remember.
Yeah.
Oof.
Stalker.
Well, you didn't make my life easy. And then you brought your parents over at one point, and they roughed me up too.
They're here now.
Are they?
Yeah. Haven't you seen my dad walking?
I haven't, actually.
I figured you probably would have,
What's your property journey? What's your, if I may ask, and you don't have to share anything you're not comfortable sharing, but I always see property as and perhaps I've had too much of the real estate Kool-Aid, but it's a long-term asset. It's an excellent investment that through the course of time, no matter what happens, the market will ebb and flow, but through the course of time, there will be the value of that home will always increase.
Yeah. Listen, I think most of the investment advisors would probably tell us, okay, with, you know, you've got your cash, you got your stocks and bonds.
Don't put too much into real estate, right?
You got your property. No, well, it's still an asset class, right?
Yep.
So you still have that asset class. And obviously, I am one for property. So this one is a second home. And then I do have a bit of land as well.
That's
free
great.
And clear.
Free and clear. Well
free
done.
And clear.
Because
great.
Land doesn't actually give you any return on investment.
No.
It does over the long term. You know, if you want to sell in 3, 5, 7, 20, 15 years, right?
Yep. Or if I decide to put something on it for rental in the future. So land's good.
Yep. Or when Logan wants to go to college, you're like, man, we've got to sell the land so she can afford. No?
No.
She's on her own? Pay for your own college.
Pay for college. Get sorted.
Yeah, but you know what? My brother is a huge believer in acquiring gradually a little bit over time. And he calls it, it's almost like a perpetual machine that feeds itself. So he wants to get investment properties that, sure, there's a mortgage. The rent, ideally, perhaps not in this current climate, but the rent will pay off that mortgage to a point where it's free and clear.
Yeah.
Then any rent that comes in is part of a retirement plan. It's also an asset that he can sell if he needs to support some particular something that may be going on or another investment. Or it's also something that he can provide and give gift to his daughter.
Yeah.
So that she can. And that's where...
And your brother has vision, eh?
So. Nick has got proper vision.
Yeah, proper vision.
Wow.
Yeah.
If you don't know my brother, you need to know my brother. You want some sound, stable advice long term. Nick, he's incredible at what he does.
Yeah.
And I call him on constantly. And I'm thinking I've got a really good idea. And he's like, well, have you thought about this? I'm like, how come I didn't think about that? That's a brilliant idea. Nick's really good at what he does.
Is.
So his approach is
still looking. I'm looking. So
are you?
But you know that.
Do you know
looking.
Any
I'm looking.
Do you know any good real estate agents that
I know, right? You're looking for me, aren't you?
Yes, I am. We'll find something.
Yeah.
It always comes down to timing.
About Airbnb, yeah?
Yeah.
Something that's
absolutely, a little bit of something. And if that doesn't work out, then you've still got something that can rent long term. There is a housing crisis at the moment.
Mm.
A lot of people are renting, and there's low supply, but there's high demand.
Yeah.
So investment properties are a very good investment.
Yeah.
And listen, it'll ebb and flow. sometimes the insurance goes up so high and or rents may go down a little bit and it may cost you, or you may not make any money on it. It may even cost you, yes. But through the course of time, the value and the return on that investment will hands down always feed you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's historical data, man. It's not me in my opinion. This is fact every time.
Agreed. Some of the valuators out there have some really good reports that show the historical data and show the increase, right? So go on their websites and you can see what's been happening in the property market.
Well, I love the data. Absolutely love the data. We capture it and we review it constantly. It gives me the confidence and the guidance and advice that my team feeds back to the marketplace to give people peace of mind.
Mm-hmm.
We're not real estate agents trying to make a sale.
Exactly.
We're in the relationship business and we're guiding people so that whatever decision they make, it's educated, it's informed, and it's made with confidence.
Yeah.
And we will stand by them in the 3, 5, 7, 10 years time when they need to either upsize, downsize. You have 5 C's.
Mm-hmm.
We have the 4 D's, right?
Okay. Tell me.
Which is death, divorce, downsize, and downturn of the economy.
Okay.
Those are sorts of things that will always have an impact on our real estate market. Regardless of what's going on, there's always going to be death, sadly, but true. There's always going to be divorce, sad but true.
Mm-hmm.
There's always going to be people wanting to downsize because, I don't know, kids gone off to college, you don't need the 4-bedroom, 5-bedroom house. You want to downsize. And upsize, I suppose, would be the... upsize, got to keep a D in there. And then downturn of economy will always have an impact on people's property investments.
You know, it's funny. As you're saying all these things, Mike, I'm thinking, you know, we've done articles. Like, follow me on LinkedIn. Well, you're on my LinkedIn, but there are so many articles that we publish around all these things, right? So succession planning from a property, wills, etc. perspective. Divorce, I just recently, we had an article that I shared in terms of things to speak to your daughter about from a financial literacy perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Not to say that divorce is going to happen, but just in case it does, right? These are things
safety net.
A female.
Constant state of preparation.
That you should, make sure that you have certain things for yourself. I like.
We went to a conference together a while ago. And it was really interesting because it was about succession planning. It was about wills. It was about living wills as well. There was a really interesting panel. Do you remember that?
Yep.
That was at the Seafire Kempton.
Yep.
And I thought that was fascinating. And I went home and I spoke to my dad. I'm like, Dad, you got to talk to these people. You know, first of all, things like, you know, who's got all the passwords to all of these different accounts? Do you have a list of accounts? I don't need to know what they are, but... Mm-hmm. They need to be as part of your will.
Yeah.
I think it's really important that everybody has a will and are prepared for the inevitable.
You know, you're talking about, so you have that part where, okay, what happens when you die, right? Okay.
Yep.
But then there is the other side of it when you're speaking about the living will. What happens if you fall over when we go outside and you don't know anything else? You don't remember anything. You're in a coma. You're still living, right? So it's all those preparations. Speak to your banker.
Speak to your banker and your wealth advisors and your real estate agents.
Uh-huh.
And you should have
lawyers.
A team. You should have a team of people.
And that's what we say, right? Relationships. We'll have a
team
good
of
network going on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So don't make any knee-jerk reactions when the market changes or something happens in your life and there's some unexpected event. Speak to your team and make sure that you're protected. I think that's probably the overarching advice that I always give.
Yeah.
Play the long term. Be patient, save. Mm-hmm. You may not know what you're saving for, but one day you'll wake up and you realize, wow, I sleep well at night.
Yeah.
I've protected myself from this unexpected event.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Kadeen, I've really enjoyed this chat. Thank you very much. I continue to enjoy our business relationship. I know my team deals with you and your team. It's fantastic. And I'm very grateful for all you and your team, what you do, particularly the corporate citizens, that the stuff that you're doing for our community is a big win for me. I think that's fantastic. And I congratulate and I'm very grateful on behalf of our community for all you're doing.
Yeah. So. No, 60 years here. So we're here helping the community prosper.
One at a time.
Yep.
Hey, well, good for you. And thank you very much again for joining me and the Property Cayman team on this slice of Cayman's life.
Thanks, Mike.
All right. We'll see you soon. Bye.
Cool.